Yeah, your mother told you that, right, John?
That is so,
don't talk to strangers.
Who chose that song? Was that you?
That's me.
That was.
I'm the musical director.
I love it. I'm the musical director of the Cochran Show, so we have a lot in common.
I get paid extra for that.
That was good. That was very good.
Yeah, your mother said don't talk to strangers, but mother does not know best because this new study that came out from the University of Chicago, it shows that talking to strangers is really a good way to have a better day. Here's what the study showed. Some commuters were instructed to have a conversation with the person who sat next to them. Some were told to keep to themselves and just hang out, enjoy the solitude, and others were told to do whatever they normally do. And then they were asked to rate their experiences on their commute. And of the three groups, the people who engaged in conversation reported the most positive train ride, the people who had the solitude, most negative. And the study showed that the longer you talk to somebody, the more positive the train ride was. And we're going to be talking to someone who's an expert in these kinds of social experiments, Dr. Eric Wesselman. He's a PhD associate professor of psychology at Illinois State. He publishes on research on various topics such as social exclusion, stigma, religion, spirituality. And we welcome him to the Karen Conti Show. Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
So this study, is this a surprise to you or is this something that you psychology people have known for years?
Well, we've known for a long time that humans are social by nature, that we hunger for belonging, for social connection. And there are various ways that we can satisfy that need. And interacting with fellow passersby, for example, can be one way of doing it.
So just trying to go back to like the Darwinistic, you know, view of this, like what is it about the human being that needs social interaction, harkening back to the days, you know, thousands of years ago? Why is it that we have that chip in our DNA that we want to be social?
Well, going back to human evolutionary history, we needed other people to survive. You know, so it's not just that we like to connect with others, but we need each other to protect each other from, you know, predators, from roving bands of other humans who may want to take what we have. But also, you know, I can do something well, but very few of us are great at everything. You know, so I may need someone who is, you know, good at farming and someone who's good at hunting and someone who's good at creating shelters. And we, you know, sort of exchange labor that way. So that's sort of where a lot of researchers come at this from, that we needed each other for survival.
And I would imagine that because of all the automatization and in the technical things, and we can go to the grocery store and buy our food, we don't have to rely on farmers and we don't have to rely on people to have those things. We can live a more solitary life, that maybe we've lost a little bit of that drive to socially interact.
I'm not sure if we've necessarily lost the drive to socially interact. There's just different ways of interacting now that we didn't have before, and technology being a big opportunity in that regard. It just sort of diversifies the way that we can connect with others.
Sure.
Eric, I have a question for you because, I knew we were going to be talking about this tonight, and my wife and I take our dogs to the dog park, and it's kind of funny. We kind of joke about it. We take the dogs there to socialize. I, however, become very anti-social. I don't want to talk to anybody with my dogs. I don't want to go through this and whatever. But what I realized today was that by not communicating, there was a lot of stress trying to avoid conversations. And then you feel bad about yourself because, you know, these people are nice. They're trying to talk to you. We're all in the same place. And then after a while, like, I start looking inward and going, man, what's wrong with me? Why am I being such a jerk? So that's all negative. So I would have been better talking to these people.
Yeah, so I mean, we definitely have a need to belong. We also, as you noted, there are times where we want to be alone, where we want to kind of shut out the noise of the world and just kind of have, you know, our personal time. And when you're around others, like at a dog park, there are social norms that if someone talks to you, you are obligated to make some sort of response. And if you don't, then you feel bad about yourself. So it is sort of an interesting catch-22.
And you know, have you ever, and I'm kind of with John, because I said earlier in the show that I, as a lawyer, I'm communicating all day long. Sometimes, you know, 10, 11 hours a day, I'm talking on the phone, I'm emailing people, I'm reading, I'm writing, I'm communicating, I'm in court trying to argue with people. So my time when I'm commuting, whether it's in a cab or a public transportation, I feel like it's my private time. And I really, sometimes I don't even want to read anything. I just want to just look out the window, look at our beautiful city, and just not communicate. Although I have had experiences where I say I've been in a bad mood and I just want to force myself to be friendly to people. And when I do that, I am happier. You start talking to the cab driver, where are you from? What's going on? Was it a busy day? And all of a sudden, you get out and you feel a little bit better about the world. So I think there's something about forcing yourself sometimes to do that.
Also, I don't, I'm a stand-up comic, so I try not to tell anybody what I do because they find that fascinating. And in reality, I really want to hear what they're doing. They think, oh, no, you don't want to hear that. It's mundane. It's whatever. It's nothing. No, I do. I do. What I do is what I do. But I love hearing about other people.
Sure.
So, that's fun.
And, Eric, I wanted to ask you this. So this study talks about talking to random people, strangers, and I'm assuming that a conversation would probably be pretty light and pretty much small talk. Would this study be different if, let's just say, would it make me happier to talk for 10 minutes to somebody randomly on a bus or call my best friend and talk to her for 10 minutes? Which do you think, is there a point where the intimacy of the conversation will drive the happiness?
I think, a lot of it depends upon, what you need at the time. And in general, there are some researchers who will talk about social interactions as, if we think of this need to belong as almost like hungering for social interaction, our social interactions are like food. And so, if I'm feeling a little bit hungry, I could eat a snack. Maybe it's not the most healthy thing, but it gives me that quick burst. Or I could eat something a little bit more nutritious. If we sort of take that into the sort of interpersonal realm, I could have a brief cursory interaction with a stranger or a Facebook friend or, something that is kind of light. But I wouldn't necessarily want to do that for a long period of time. And if all I had was sort of these cursory light interactions, I would still not be fulfilling that need the way I should. So, it's good to have those snacks, but you can't subsist on that alone.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And let me ask you this about the, we've talked about this over and over on my show. It's kind of a constant theme. And John DeCoss here, who is a stand-up comic, we've talked about how people are so very sensitive politically. And I don't talk about politics on this show. It's going nowhere. Even when I don't talk politics, people think I'm talking politics. And they perceive that I'm talking politics. And so, and John DeCoss, being political on the stage is just, you're going nowhere with that. Because it's just so polarized. How, in your studies and what you do, and I've looked at some of your things that you've done and things that you talk about, how has that affected human interaction generally?
Well, talking about divisive, sensitive topics certainly is a way to get one's emotions going. And I think it's probably best to just kind of know your boundaries and know who you're talking to, right? So as we go through our interactions, as we develop more intimate relationships with people, we know what are sort of the hot button topics, the social landmines that we choose to avoid with some people. And, we know other relationships where we can feel comfortable, being vulnerable in, sort of showing, what our inner thoughts are that may be a little bit upsetting. And we know, can they handle that? Is this going to be a, maybe it's a heated but respectful conversation, or is it just going to devolve into name calling? Right. So we sort of learn that. In terms of interacting with these sort of cursory stranger relationships, if you're going to strike up a conversation with someone you don't know that well, it's probably just good to avoid those types of topics.
Yep, it makes sense. If you have any questions for Eric or have something to weigh in on in this conversation, you can call me here at 312-981-7200 or text to 981-7200. Eric, can you hold for a little bit? We're going to take a break.
Sure.
All right. Take care. We'll be right back. This is the Karen Conti Show.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wandering in the night. What were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was...
I'm picturing this. I'm talking to someone on the bus, State Street bus, and all of a sudden, we're in love. No, that I don't picture that at all. No, I really don't. Dr. Eric Wesselman is with us, and we're talking about talking to strangers and how this is a new study that shows that talking to strangers makes you happy. It's something you're connecting with people. You're being social. We're being our social animal best self. Dr. Wesselman, there was also another article that I saw this week, and it talked about how we have an increasing number of seniors who are lonely and suicidal. It was just increasing numbers. Can you weigh on this? Does this, in your, speculating, I guess, does this have something to do with that feeling of being isolated, not having someone to have social interactions with?
I think you're right. When you look at the research on loneliness and suicidal ideation, a big component does seem to be this feeling of social disconnection, of alienation, that leads to things like depression, feelings of meaninglessness. I think that's one contributor.
We have a texter from the 312 area code who said, you've touched on a couple of things I'm perplexed by. I'm 70, and I interact with people at the grocery store on the street, if fitting. It seems, though, the majority of millennials have no idea how to react. She says, this morning I was out walking my dog past a family, mother and father and young child. I simply said good morning. No response. No eye contact. It was only good morning, she says. Is there? It was only good morning. Not like, can I borrow $5? Right. No. So what is it? What does that say? Is there some idea that the millennial generation is not very good at these social interactions?
I'm not sure about that particular literature, but just my own personal observations and musings. I think that. That is definitely something that people are concerned about, right? So, as I mentioned earlier, technology has given us lots of ways to connect with others in ways that we feel comfortable with. But I do think that if one only spends their time connecting with others through some sort of device like a smartphone or social networking, that maybe they do lose something of interpersonal face-to-face interaction skills, sort of the art of small talk and things like that, that may, perhaps they're just not getting practice doing. And that is something that we as a society will have to think hard about and to figure out how to address that.
Because you're right. I'm comparing having an email conversation with a friend of mine on a Monday morning versus talking to someone in the elevator. You look nice today. I like your shoes. Oh, it's a nice day out. Small, stupid talk. But you feel better after that personal connection and much better than even the email with somebody who you know and who knows you. Because I don't know what it is. If it's something that is actually a visual thing, the eye contact is something that adds something to the communication that makes it more, makes the happiness in your brain trigger. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's different.
Eric, you've done the study. So what changes are you making, or how has this affected you, or have you changed at all?
In terms of just minimal social interactions,
right.
I think that some of the studies that I've done on eye contact with strangers, or what happens when you break communication with someone when you're talking and you check your cell phone, stuff like that, it has changed the way that I approach. So when I'm walking outside, I do try to make eye contact with people more, give them a nod. Maybe they don't nod back, and I try not to be offended by that. But I, just knowing that, staring through someone, ignoring them can be problematic. I especially wrestle with this when I'm, walking by perhaps people on, who are homeless, who may be asking for change. It's very easy to walk by that person and just ignore them, so those are situations where I've really sort of tried to make active attempts to not ignore someone. in terms of phone usage, if I'm going to have my phone or if I'm expecting a text from someone, you know, what I will do is if I'm in the middle of a conversation, I'll tell them, you know, if my phone goes off, you know, hold on for a second, please. I need to check to make sure it's, you know, not my spouse or my kid's school or something like that. And I think if you give someone that sort of warning, they know what to expect. It's not going to be as jarring if, you know, they're in the middle of telling you a serious story and you just start texting, right? Because then they don't know what's going on. Are you not interested in them? It could be anything.
You know, that's really a good point. And in my office, long ago, I made kind of a rule. It's a Karen's rule that when we're talking to a client, we don't bring our cell phone into the meeting. And a lot of my young people, they use it to tell time. They use it to calculate things. They'll use it to maybe check something, you know, a filing online. I can check out, you know, and it comes in handy when you have a client interview because you might want to be, you know, getting information.
Right.
But what it does is it looks like you're not paying attention. It looks like you've got something better to do, especially the older people. I know people my age, when I see someone pull out a cell phone when I'm talking to them, I just think it's rude. And I know that they're not, I know they probably don't intend it to be rude, but I find it just, it's not something I like at all. It really is off-putting to me. Is that something that the younger generation, maybe they don't care so much about, but maybe the older generation does?
I think there's probably generational things. A lot of it is just expectation, which is why I think it's so important to, if I'm going to check my phone, to sort of let someone know, you know, hey, I'm expecting a call from my, you know, kid's school or whatever, so please don't be offended if I do this. You know, I anticipate in some of my own research, I didn't really find much in terms of age effects. A lot of my work has been with millennial college students, and they definitely are students who still are bothered when they're fubbed, right? I don't think that it doesn't bother them at all. I think there's just different norms and expectations. So, you know, there may be an appropriate way of doing it that those of us who are not of that generation aren't savvy to.
You know, there was a texter who said, paying a compliment to a complete stranger can put a smile on two faces. You know, it's so true. You know what? When you're in a bad mood and you just want to just, you know, just try this, really. Just walk up to your cab driver, your bus driver, someone on, I like your shoes, I like the way you look, I, you know, or whatever it is. I'm telling you, it makes a difference. That person smiles, you smile, you know, no harm. And it didn't cost anything.
That's true.
But on the other hand, I really think there's this mode of city mode and country mode. Like, I have a house in Wisconsin. When I go to Wisconsin, I'm not on my guard at all. So I will talk to people more readily than when I do in the city because, you know, you're on your guard a little bit about someone trying to take advantage of you or, you know, pickpocketing you or whatever it is. And so there's just a little bit of a shield that I think that I put up in the city, and I don't know, that's probably normal, I would imagine.
I think so. I hope so.
Eric, one final question. You talk a little bit in some of the things I saw online about being ostracized. Can you tell our audience, just define that in terms of how you have researched it and what it means in society?
So ostracism is a form of social exclusion. So we can almost think of it, you know, we've been talking a lot about the need to belong and inclusion, ways of connecting with people. This is sort of like the polar opposite. And there are various ways to exclude people. It could be, you know, giving negative attention to someone, you know, insulting them or whatever. But in the context of ostracism particularly, my colleagues and I argue that's really characterized by being ignored. Right, so it's not only that you're just excluding me, you know, but you're treating me as if I don't exist, and that seems to be particularly poignant, right? Sort of the truism of, you know, bad attention is better than no attention. I mean, there seems to be something to that. You know, it's not great, but we would prefer that to being treated as if we were a ghost.
Interesting. That's a very interesting thing, and we could get into the whole bullying thing,
yes, yes.
You know, and how that goes. But Dr. Eric Wesselman, thank you so much for joining us, and now we're not strangers anymore, but we can still talk, and I think we'll still make each other happy.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Eric, if you see me on the street, don't say hi.
Okay. All right. I'll try to remember that.
Thanks.
No eye contact. All right. Take care. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show.